I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa.
Good evening, Bash on Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies on Voice of Ashon 101.9. And today we have a special guest with us, a gentleman by the name of Doug Sharp. He, I know him personally from doing an evening at Snapdragon called Weird Music Night. Doug, would you tell us a little bit about that? And then we'll talk about your story that you're going to read for us.
I'm very proud of it. It's become an island institution. About every six months, I get six musicians together, and their music is all over the place. Next show, which will be January, February, we're going to have somebody playing the bicycle and somebody playing the musical saw. So
I love it. Yeah, people definitely do get weird. It's awesome. Yeah. It's a fun night. And people from all walks of life come to see it, and it's stellar. But today we're going to talk about you living in England in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. From what year to what year were you there?
66 to 70.
Yeah. That must have been crazy to be in. Where were you in London proper?
We were
then?
Outside of London, about an hour outside in a town called Farnham Common. But it was an easy train ride into London. So I got in there a lot.
What were you doing there?
Dad was in the Air Force. I was lucky enough to be there all through high school.
I was just going to ask
that was good.
What time of life was that?
Yeah.
Did you pick up an old English accent?
I did not.
Oh, man.
I couldn't even do a fake one that well, unfortunately.
Where did you guys go after England? I mean, as a family.
I went off to college, Stanford, and, you know, we had been all over the place. I'll talk a little about it.
Yeah, no, of course, that's why we're here. But you're also a video game programmer.
Yep, a developer. In the 80s, I did two hit games.
Which ones?
Chipwits and The King of Chicago.
And, nice.
And currently, I got a team of guys together, and we're reviving Chipwits. So
oh, really?
Congratulations. Yeah. Thanks.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
I have a friend in Los Angeles who is a video game person.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on, I'm trying to think of what was the big one that he worked on. I'll remember it while you're telling your story.
Okay.
But actually, I just want to listen to your story now.
But
all right, Doug, take us away to London, to England in the 1960s.
As I said, my dad was in the Air Force, so my family moved a lot. I went to 12 different schools before college. Our biggest moving adventure was in 57, when we moved from Orlando to Fairbanks, a 5,000-mile drive. The Alcan Highway wasn't paved then, so we drove 1,200 of those miles on mud and gravel. In 66, we moved to the UK for 3 years. I went to London Central High School, an American high school plopped down in the UK. It was in an abandoned World War II military base. The school was surrounded by rusty barbed wire. Our classes were held in Quonset huts. We played American football, but our away games were at army schools in Berlin and Frankfurt. Living in the UK in the late 60s was a blast. I took full advantage of living there. I took a train to London at least once a month. Movies, museums, back streets, underground. I got to know London well. Here's a song about hitchhiking by Simon and Garfunkel. Came out in 68, and it was in my mind the whole trip.
Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner pies and walked said as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh. This shipping seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America.
I love to hitchhike. I thumbed 3 trips around Cornwall and 3 trips around Wales. It was incredibly easy to get rides. I could start to hitchhike on Friday after school and get home late Sunday. I got lots of small rides. Families often picked me up. I mostly stayed in youth hostels, but drivers often offered to let me stay in their homes. I often slept in parks and even cemeteries. When I mapped out a trip, I'd mark the castles along my route. I'd stop at as many as I could. In the late 60s, security was loose on minor castles. That let me do some fun climbs and real dungeon explorations. At the time, I had a romantic view of castles. They were there to protect against invasions. I learned later that they're instruments of oppression. After William the Conqueror invaded England, he gave his friends earldoms. The earls built castles to control the population. It was hard to rebel against a castled force, and it was easy for the earls to lead reprisal raids out of the castle. As cool as they are, castles are usually oppressed rather than protected. Cornwall juts out of the southwest of England. My favorite Cornish places are Wells Cathedral, which has a wonderfully futuristic central structure, even though it was built in the 14th century. Tintagel Castle, a 13th century ruined castle linked to the Arthur legend, stands on a spectacular promontory jutting into the sea. Underneath it is a sea-carved tunnel called Merlin's Cave, which most visitors miss. Central Cornwall is bleak and littered with tall, great stone chimneys of abandoned tin mines and jumbles of boulders that were Bronze Age stone burial cairns. Wales is more mountainous and forested than Cornwall. My favorite Welsh castle is Carrigkennan. It's perched picturesquely on a high cliff and has a cool underground passage to a truly scary dungeon. In 1968, my junior year of high school, I plotted an epic hitchhike from Madrid to Rome. I'd start in Madrid because one of my best buddies, Mike Perrin, lived there. We'd hitchhike together. The trip would end in Rome because all roads. But first I took Mike on a test hitchhike. He hadn't thumbed, so I wanted him to know what it was like and to see if we could stand each other's company on the road. So I took him hitchhiking around Wales. It was hilarious. Mike was a complainer, and our trip brought out the worst in him. Food, weather, boredom, all triggered his griping and grumbling. His belly aching cheered me up immensely. I'm a naturally cheerful guy, and his moaning was so dramatic. My laughter didn't improve his mood. Of course, it rained every day of our 3-day trip. We wound up sleeping on the ground 2 of the nights. One morning, we woke up looking up at a flock of curious sheep who were staring down on us. Mike did not find that funny, but I busted a gut. We ran out of rides on a narrow mountain road near a town called Blenau Ffestiniog. It was getting dark, and we had no food, and Mike was complaining pitifully, making me chuckle. But then I got hungry, too. Finally, a blessed truck stopped, a farmer with a heavy Welsh accent. Extremely hospitable, took us to his farm and served us baked beans on toast, which I still eat as a comfort food. His wife and he spoke Welsh as their primary language, which seemed very exotic to me. Summer 1969, time for my big adventure. Most of you don't remember, but 1969, particularly July, was peak America. We were knee-deep in the bloody Vietnam War. We landed on the moon. I expected to have some ugly encounters on the trip due to the Vietnam War. Never happened. So the family drove from UK to Madrid. On the night of July 16th, we stayed at a hotel in the Pyrenees Mountains. I gave instructions to the hotel concierge. At about 4 a.m., he woke us up to watch the moon landing. TV reception was lousy. I watched the landing through static with a Spanish announcer. I'm a space nut, so it was great. Mike's family lived in Madrid, and they were doing it right. They learned Spanish and knew their way around Madrid. They cooked a great paella. One night, they took us to a tiny flamenco bar. We sat right by the stage. The flamenco performance boggled young Dougie. The gorgeous red-dressed flamenco dancer stomping and writhing, glaring and beckoning. I'd never seen anything like the intense passion. That memory is lodged firmly in my brain. Mike had become very cool. He rolled up his sleeves in a way I started copying. Whenever I roll up my sleeves, I think of Mike. We went to bars and drank cerveza. Content warning, underage drinking. It was easy for a 17-year-old to buy booze in most of Europe then. There may have been pubs in Britain that carded you, but I never found one. Seemed that if you were tall enough to reach up and put your shilling on the bar, they would serve you a half pint. Mike also seemed to know about girls, who were a mystery to me. He talked a lot about girls and could actually talk to girls. Mike was cool. We started our trip by hitchhiking from Madrid to Barcelona. After a few unmemorable rides, along came one of the most memorable. Most rides I've long forgotten, but this one stands out even after 54 years, the generous jerk. He asked if he could buy us lunch. Sure thing. We stopped at a little cafe bar perched on the lip of a steep stream-carved gorge. When we entered the cafe, the generous jerk's personality filled the room. He announced that as long as he was there, no one would be allowed to pay for a drink. He ordered a round of cervezas and a bottle of anise for me. Anise is a licorice-flavored liqueur popular all around the Mediterranean called ouzo, sambuca, rocky, arak. It's strong, especially for a 17-year-old new to booze. By the time the main course came, I was already far gone. Our table overlooked the gorge and rushing river, and the height made me a bit dizzy. A player piano provided the music and a sad little memory. In front of the piano, a kid, maybe 7 years old, pedaled a tricycle around and around in a small circle. When the piano stopped, the kid wound the crank and got back on his trike. He was unsteady on his feet. I couldn't tell if he was drunk or had a neurological problem. The main course was a huge platter of crayfish arranged in concentric circles. At the first bite, I gulped beer. The crayfish had been marinated in a clear, extremely spicy liquid. When we left, he paid the bill for lunch and everybody's liquor. As we got back into his car, Mike and I felt we'd lucked out with our ride. But he stopped at just about every bar along the way. When we entered a bar, he bought drinks for everyone. People smiled at us like we'd hit the jackpot, getting a ride with a generous guy. But then he continued to pay for everyone's drinks. He wouldn't let anyone else buy drinks or buy him a drink. He got rude about it. Generous jerk. When we walked out of the bar, everyone gave us pitying looks. We had to go with him because it was dark and towns were far apart and scary looking, and he was headed to Barcelona, our next stop. Luckily, the drunker he got, the slower he drove. We were leery when he asked if he could pay for a hotel room. We stopped at a hotel in the middle of a barren flatland. He paid for separate rooms. When we woke, he was gone. We stood by the road with our thumbs out for a long time. We had a bottle of red wine, but no bottle opener. So we smashed the top of the bottle with a rock and drank from the jagged edge. We hit Barcelona, which is a magical town. I'm going to go back to live there for a while, explore it. My most vivid memory of Barcelona is sitting in a bar next to Mike and next to two large sex workers. When they found out we were only 17, they thought it was hilarious. They wanted to mother us. From Barcelona, we were to travel along the Mediterranean coast, the exotic-sounding French Riviera. Hitchhiking from Barcelona to the French border was easy, but once we hit France, no one would give us a ride. No one. It wasn't because there was no traffic. Au contraire, this was summer on the Mediterranean coast. There was a continuous traffic jam along the whole route, a beach and beautiful ocean to the right, and a line of autos ignoring us to the left. At times, we could walk faster than the traffic. We spent our first night in France camped on the beach. We finally gave up hitchhiking and bought train tickets to Nice. I wanted to see Roman ruins, so we stopped at Arles to see the amphitheater, which is like a small coliseum. My big memory of Nice is being frightened and thrilled as I puttered in a rented motorbike up and down the coastal hills from Nice to Monaco and back. Mike ran out of money, so he had to get back to Madrid. We bid each other a joking goodbye and didn't see one another again for over 30 years. I took a train to Genoa and started hitchhiking again. Hitchhiking was easy in Italy. It was like England, lots of small rides, sometimes squeezing into a car with a family. A weird memory. I'm staying in a cheap hotel. I return to my room and find a maid inside holding a hunting knife and saying Schrecklich, Schrecklich, which I later found out means terrible in German. It was my hunting knife I carried into my backpack, but she dug into my pack to get the knife. She kept saying Schrecklich and waving the knife in the air. She did leave without stabbing me. Maybe it was a joke. Fear can sure etch a memory. I was amazed that Italy was gripped by moon landing fever. Many cars sported Apollo stickers. One guy, when he found out I was American, pointed to the sky and said, La Luna, La Luna. Before heading south to Rome, I crossed Italy to Venice. Venice was extremely memorable. It was raining when I got there. Almost immediately, I fell in with two Swedes. We recognized each other as travelers from our backpacks. They'd found a perfect spot to camp, a fenced park. We had to climb over a spiked fence to reach it, but it was perfect. I threw a poncho over my pack against the rain, and we climbed back over the fence to explore Venice. One of the Swedes, Christer Olsen, was on a mission. His girlfriend was from Venice, or so he claimed, and he needed to find her childhood home. He didn't know where it was, but said he would recognize it, which I doubt. So he bought a jug of red wine and explored Venice. We searched back streets and gazed from bridges. The jug of wine emptied, and my memory of the search are hazy. We never found her home. Around 5 in the morning, Christer said that we needed to go to a particular bar to try its brandy. I didn't know about the danger of mixing wine and booze. The bar was in a basement. We drank some brandy. I was gripped by nausea and had no time to make it to the exit. I threw up into my cupped hand as the bar owner glared. We slunk out into the dawn and somehow got back to our campsite. I have no memory of climbing over the spiked fence drunk. I have no memory the next day. I hitched to Florence and changed gears from adventurer to tourist. I love museums, art, and history. Florence has museums. The Uffizi Gallery, Botticelli's Birth of Venus, and the Pitti Palace, home of the murderous Medicis. In Rome, I spent most of my time at the Forum, the heart of ancient Rome. For centuries, the Forum was a center of day-to-day life in Rome, the site of processions and elections, venue for public speeches, criminal trials, and gladiatorial matches, and the nucleus of commercial affairs. Here, statues and monuments commemorate the city's great men. It's been called the most celebrated meeting place in the world and in all history. The Forum's black stone, or lapis niger, particularly fascinated me. The black stone is in an underground temple from the 4th century BC. It's inscribed with the earliest example of Old Latin, legends associated with the Romulus and Remus story of Rome's birth. Of course, I saw the Colosseum, St. Peter's, and Michelangelo's Davis, but the Forum was my place in Rome. Other memories of Rome are pizzas topped with potato slices and refreshing lemon gelato. Time to head back to the UK. I was tired and had a little money left, so I took the train. I was touristed out and ready to get lazy. Here's a song, 1968, by the Small Faces, about getting lazy.
Wouldn't it be nice to get on with me neighbors? They make it very clear they've got no room for ravers. They stop me from grooving, they bang on me wall. They're putting me fast in, it's no good at all. Lazy Sunday afternoon, I've got no mind to worry. I close my eyes and drift away.
I was touristed out. My mind was glutted with art and history. When my train stopped in Cologne, Germany, I was too burnt out to walk a block to see the Cologne Cathedral. Took the ferry across the channel, and I was home. That's the story of my epic hitchhike from Madrid to Rome. Someday, I'd like to tell you the story of my 1974 hitchhike from London to Athens.
Doug, I want to say thank you so much for taking the time to write that. It's really well written, first off.
Thank you. It's very funny.
It has you've got good wit on that for sure.
Appreciate that.
I really enjoy it. And one thing I will tell you is potato pizza is absolutely one of my favorite things.
Really? I bought it all the time when I was there. Yeah.
When I was an exchange student in Italy in the 80s, your story sounds so... Like, I feel like we were on a very similar journey, but 20 years apart. Because I was there the first time when I was 16 in 87. And I stayed at a language camp outside of Rome for a month before I would go on to where my actual family was. Mm-hmm. But I used to go into Rome all the time and get that potato pizza. Oh, my God. I make it a Snapdragon sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to.
I love it.
Give me a call the next time.
I will, definitely.
I haven't had it in 50
I will. Mine's
nine
a little
years.
Bit different. But
okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
For sure. Oh, thank you so much for sharing that.
You bet.
Wow, what a journey. How long did it take you to hitchhike?
I have forgotten.
Like, how long was that whole trip?
I have forgotten. I think it was... around 2 weeks, but I couldn't
That's
tell you for
sure. That's a lot to cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Is your friend Mike still around?
Nope. We got together a few times, but no, he's not with us anymore.
What about the Swedes?
It's funny, I only remember Krister's name because I wrote it down, meaning to write to him, but mm-hmm. I never did, so.
It's always a fascinating thing when you're on those journeys, and I've said this before on the show, like you make best friends in 5 minutes and
That's
then you
true.
Probably never see them again, you know, or
right.
maybe once, maybe twice, if uh-huh. you're lucky. But in those moments, they're so special.
Yeah.
And they just mean everything.
Yeah. And thinking back, you know, I see some faces of people I briefly, you know, traveled with, and,
mm-hmm.
But have forgotten.
Yeah. I go back and I look at like old photos. I was lucky enough to travel with somebody who at that time really always had a camera with her and took photos.
Ooh.
And I was not that person. Mm-hmm. I do it now, of course, and have for a long time. But it just to go back and look, and I'm like, I know that face. I can tell something about you, but I couldn't tell, you know what I mean? And I would have never seen him again.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, I took very few pictures of that trip, but do have a nice one of Mike and I on the beach where we camped. But,
nice. Do you have any journeys planned for now times?
I do plan to go back to England, visit some friends there. I have a friend who has a very nice place in London. So
yeah, you should definitely take advantage of that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I want to show Alex some of my favorite places.
Yeah, Wales, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to go to Wales. I have a good friend from there, and I'm always like, I want to go with you. It's just never happened, but one day, I hope so.
On your list.
On my list, exactly.
Yeah, other than that, trips, nothing. Nothing in particular, but I will travel.
I'm sure you will. Doug, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Big pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting
me. I'd love to have you come back on.
Will do.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you so much, Vashon Island. This is Megan Hastings and the Cats and Jammer Follies.